Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Oh.
Welcome and hello. This is Joseph G. with Rum Radio on rumradio.org, the most comprehensive 12-step sponsorship in the known and the unknown universe, which is either shrinking or expanding as we're speaking. They change that all the time, so we never really know for sure. I would like to acknowledge WNAH, Hoyt Carter and Tony the Horse, who affords us the opportunity to broadcast live to their listening audience in Nashville, parts of Kentucky and Alabama, as a public service presentation. We also like to acknowledge RecoveryToday.net magazine. It's one of the finer recovery journals that affords us some print space from time to time. I gratefully like to introduce my co-host, Harold B., a family intervention specialist. He does a fine work with troubled families, and I personally believe the family are the basic unit of our society, and as the family goes, so does the nation. Harold, you told me you've written a book or something to that effect. Tell me about that.
Well, yes, I really feel led by Holy Spirit to help parents all over the place, and so I'm working on a book about parenting teens, and it's slow going, but I think it'll really help to inspire people and change lives and help parents get on the right track. Or, what I like to say is turning good parents into great parents. That's my goal. And it'll contain real life stories and situations that really apply to everyday situations in our culture now. Things have changed a lot. I'm a grandparent of 9 grandkids, and things are a lot different than when I raised my kids, and things are even very different than when my kids raised their kids. Which they're doing now. The grandkids range in age from 19 all the way down to 4. And so, but there are some wonderful principles that come from the Bible and that can help people from any background. And so that's my goal, and I've done that work for a long time. And I've also been in recovery a long time, and so I just want to take a moment to tell everyone this is a public service program. It's not a commercial announcement, and what Joseph has done with his webpage, rumradio.org, is really admirable. He and I are both in recovery and have both attended Alcoholics Anonymous, and he gave me permission to say that. And I'm very grateful to AA for the materials and mostly the people that gather together still and improve their conscious contact with God. That's what AA is all about. That's what it says in step 11. And that's currently a focus of mine, is step 11, sought through meditation and prayer to increase our conscious contact with God, praying only for 2 things: knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And so that is AA in a nutshell, and that has really produced some life-changing improvements in my life, and I do what I can to help people that are new in the program. And one of those one of those things is attending, continuing to attend step groups and work the steps in my life, practice these principles in my life, and then reach back and help people that are newer in the program. And so one of the ways I do that is by attending and studying and sponsoring, and that's what tonight's focus is about, and that's what Joseph's website is about. Rumradio.org is about how to find a sponsor, how to be a sponsor, how to find a sponsee, what to do as far as helping other people, what not to do in order to be a positive influence over people. And he has created the website at his own expense. He doesn't make money from it. In fact, it costs him thousands, but he continues to do that and improve the site and work on it. And I think 1,000 people a week take advantage of the information and inspiration on the site. And I admire that and just want everybody to know that that I do and I support that. And so let me turn it back over to you, Joseph. Thanks for that introduction.
You're welcome, Harold. Actually, we're up to about 25 or 2,600 a week hits on the website. We're averaging, this month might probably be around 12,000 for the month. So that's about $400. There is no dollars. Excuse me. When I get large numbers, my mind goes to money for some reason. I don't know. These are people. I like to think Harold's work with children, what he's trying to accomplish, is that you can only, if you think you could change the world, it's either grandiose romanticism or politics. You can only change the world one teenager at a time. My father wasn't really a big Bible scholar, but the one thing that he really adhered to was spare the rod and spoil the child. So my father always made sure he had several rods to choose from. Most people, when they play golf, you know, they have certain irons. My father had a bag full of spare rods. He believed in the corporal punishment method of getting one's attention. I don't agree with that particularly, but that's how some people used to deal it. You do that anymore. I think we've lost a little bit when you can't do that, maybe just a little, from not being able to do that. Children, I think, are a little bit more rampant now. One thing in the meetings of AA and NA and CA that I've noticed, they're coming in younger and younger. It used to be when I came in 15, 16 years ago, you didn't see a lot of really young people go in there. Most alcoholics would come in middle-aged plus, you know, because alcohol was a slow burn and we were able to maintain at least for a certain point in time before it became deadly, and we were waking into that jumping off point. But today it seems because of the drugs and the alcohol, most people don't realize alcohol, more people overdose from alcohol than any other drug. But there's always other drugs involved when there's consumption of alcohol, my experience. And they're coming in younger and younger, and I believe this is because of the fragmentation of the family unit. I belong to a conservative church, and 30 years ago, my church's moral philosophy and society's moral philosophy were pretty well on the same plane. But you look at it now, the church, my church hadn't changed, but society has created this tremendous chasm of morality. And it all starts with the individual family. So I really applaud to what you're trying to do, Harold. It's sometimes it's a voice in a wilderness trying to get out that message. We have drug addicts and alcoholics raising drug addicts and alcoholics, and it's to no good for anybody. It doesn't serve the nation, doesn't serve the community, it doesn't serve the family, and it certainly doesn't serve God. So I applaud your efforts.
Well, let me mention one thing about that, where you're so right that drugs, alcohol is a drug. More people die from alcohol overdose than all the other drug overdoses combined. Let me mention that. And we're finding as early as the third grade, children are bringing pills to school, and they're bringing vodka to school in Pepsi cans and Gatorade bottles and sharing it with their friends in junior high school, sometimes even as early as elementary school. And the biggest problem is alcohol, and then all the other problems follow after that. So it's happening younger and younger, and it's more and more alarming. Child suicide is on the rise, and I've dealt with seven different suicidal kids just in the past 3 months. The youngest suicidal child that I worked with was 7 years old, and I think Hollywood has a lot to do with it. The script writers have no business writing suicides into their scripts. Children are such copycats, and they copy what they see on TV and movies, and I think it would help a lot if the script writers would stop writing that in. There's really not a need for it except for the thrill factor, but that's what we're dealing with these days. Things are very serious, and we need a lot more stability in the home. We need dads who will stick around, or sometimes it's a big help to have a dad who isn't necessarily biologically related step forward and love the kids. That's a big help. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. Well, I'd like to start tonight. Tonight we're going to do what Captain's Table, excerpts from the Captain's Table. These are philosophies, understandings, little mishmash from experience in AA. But before I get started, one of the first assignments I give to a new sponsee that someone has admitted that they have an alcohol, drinking, or drug problem, and they've gotten a desire or beginner's chip. They had a beginner's chip or an outward an outward sign. It's a little aluminum disc. It's the same color as handcuffs. It's a little aluminum disc with a triangle and to the known selfie truths imprinted on the back. Sometimes it's just a poker chip, but it's what we call a desire or a beginner's chip. And we tell them it's an outward sign of an inward commitment to try our way of life for 24 hours. One day. Can you do it for one day? And if they get up, they take that walk of shame and they go up there and they acknowledge the problem. You ever notice you go to the dentist sometimes and you have a toothache, a tooth's bothering you, you sit in the dentist chair and all of a sudden you can't find the tooth, which one was bothering you? And from what I understand is that because you took an action to take care of a problem and immediately some relief is found. And this is what happens when people get up and they get beginner's chip. Usually there's an exhale of relief that they've admitted that there was a problem. And I usually try to get them as soon as they do that. They're hot. They're ready to go. They know they're in a lot of pain. And they're looking for answers, a simple solution to a complicated problem. So when I first meet my new sponsee, I ask him, have you had enough? Enough pain, enough sorrow, enough humiliation, enough sickness. Are you sick and tired of being sick and tired? Have you had enough? Yes. Are you willing to go to any length to achieve sobriety? Yeah, no. Yes. And I tell them you can get well from this disease of mind, body, and spirit, but there's certain things you have to do. I produce Clancy's 7 Questions. It's on the website. It's underneath the How to Find the Sponsee tab. You can print it out. It's all in Word. It's a little mini fourth step. I said, here you go. You be prepared. If you're looking for a sponsee, be prepared. The big book on page 89 says, go find a prospect and start working on him. It doesn't say have a prospect go find you. This is the way we do it now, but that's what it says in the big book, which I believe it's the correct way to do it. If we don't have such things as rules and regulations or correct things, but I find this to be very productive for me. So I'm prepared, and what I've realized is that preparation, when preparation meets opportunity. That's what we call luck. So if you're prepared, the student will appear when the teacher is ready. And you'll get, if you're prepared, you'll find your sponsee, and you can start working with him. When the first assignment I give him is for the next 30 days, I ask him to get a newcomer's packet or a list of 25 or 30 men's names from his home group to participate in a home group with phone numbers. And I want you to call a different man every day and ask permission to recite the third step prayer. That gets your sponsee used to picking up the 500-pound telephone asking for help. It connects him up with his home group. They get to know his name, and he gets to know their name. It encapsulates what we're going to try to accomplish by working all 12 steps. It's also called a surrender prayer, which is very germane to where this man is right now. Men for with men and women for with women when possible. The key is to work the steps. That's usually the most optimal, but it doesn't have to be. And then fourthly, the person he was calling might have been up his first drink of alcohol. Chances are when he hears that prayer, he will not. No guarantee, but your sponsee is already in service work. He's taking simple instruction, and he's ready to go. So, and this is the prayer. This is found on page 63 of our basic text, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and to do with me as thy will. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Can I get an amen on that?
Amen. That's great. That's great. Sharing that every day is very important.
It is. And for the first 30 days, it's a really good kickstart. It puts the sponsee in a good spiritual position. This is a spiritual program for non-spiritual people. This is a simple program for complicated people. We keep it simple, but we don't have to keep it stupid. We can learn ways to be the most effective we can, and we can be the most effective to our fellows. I believe when we're in the service of our fellow beings, we're in the service of our God. And when we're in the service of our God, we're divorced from self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. And in that moment and in that service, is that not when we make our conscious contact with our Creator, who lives from moment to moment, eternity to eternity, life everlasting? The magic words in AA is action and more action, for faith without works is dead. And this is what Rum Radio is about. It's a direction to take that action. So tonight we're going to talk about meetings in your neck of the woods. Meetings are very important. Meetings are our social. Meetings are our fellowship. Meetings is where we find our sponsees. We get relief from the storm. We're like a group of orphans who've been rescued from a shipwreck, from captain's table to steerage. We have a common, we've survived from a common disaster. And it's a connection that few people and few places have. So this is a meeting. You have meetings. I call it meetings in your neck of the woods. A meeting of the mind, if so inclined, with memories of habits that drove us insane. A free exchange of facts that transform, reshape, an implication that engages thoughts that there is a better way. AA meetings are a cross between a self-help program, group therapy, and a revival meeting. Open meetings, topic meetings. Meeting formats and procedures are as diverse as there are groups. I've been to meetings all over most of these United States and some foreign countries, including Mississippi. In early 1960s, when wife swapping was in vogue, an AA group formed around the platform of this platform of depravity. A moral indignant railed to Bill W. as to the potential black eye to the AA and to the dark cloud of guilt by association. Bill W. asked, are they staying sober? The emphatic reply was, yes, they are. Bill explained in his inimitable way that every group has the right to be wrong. It only takes two things to start a new AA group, a resentment and a coffee pot. and the coffee pot is optional. Meeting formats are borrowed. They develop from the surrounding and familiar formats of the nearby groups. The founders of the new group emulate the familiar, the good, the not so good, and the unthinking. Change is hard for most, and 12-step fellowships sometimes can be an extreme example of maintaining the status quo. Once upon a time, a fight broke out when someone changed the positions of the chairs. I was in St. Teresa's in Austin. We had paid dearly for our seats, and now we've become glued to our personal point of view. You believe that, Harold? It was a fight because they changed the positions of the chair in the room without having a good time.
I've seen it over and over again. We come into the rooms where at first I was too foggy to really understand much, but it was so great to have found a place where I would be accepted no matter what. They couldn't kick me out, and that has become one of the main things that has made AA grow, because now it's not recommended to come to an AA meeting drunk, but I have been at many meetings. My first sponsor was a wonderful guy, and I went to 1,000 meetings the first 2 years of my serious working the steps. And so my first sponsor was Paul, and he was 6'4", 295, and a power greater than myself. So that made sense to me. And so he would call up on the phone with no notice whatsoever and say, "Come on, we're going on a 12-step call." And we'd go out to help a family who had called, or an individual who had called who was drinking too much and knew it, and knew we had something and wanted to talk to us about that. So he would grab me and off we would go. And then in the meetings, we would stay after the meeting and talk to people, and he would grab me, and that was my education. But the most interesting part was what we would do if someone stumbled through the door drunk. Because that if someone has just quit drinking in the last few days or last few weeks, the smell of a person drinking or drunk can be quite disturbing, and it can be kind of a relapse trigger. So we don't want to disturb or trigger the new people, but we do want to reach out to the guy who's coming through the door. I mean, even though he is drunk, some part of him is coming in and knows that he needs some help. So my sponsor and I, Paul and I, would get up and grab the guy by the arm and thank him for coming and look him in the eye and show him some kindness, and we would take him either to the back room or out the door, and if the weather was okay, we would talk to him one-on-one or two-on-one. It was sometimes effective. I mean, the fellow was getting some attention, and that's what he had come for, and the new people in the room were not disturbed, and we did it many times, and that was how to handle any disturbance in a meeting, really, is take the person outside. It helps to have somebody, you know, I'm 6'1", he was 6'4", at the time, and it helps to have big guys do that. But I've seen it, ladies would grab a woman who came drunk, and they would take her outside and talk to her. And now the interesting thing is the next day we would sometimes run into the person that had been at the meeting drunk. The next day they had no recollection of it whatsoever. In fact, that's why a lot of people drink. They can't remember. It helps them forget. And so eventually my sponsor developed what he called the three-minute rule, which I've adopted as my rule. If someone has shown up or has called on the phone and they're plastered, I'll give them 3 minutes, but that's about it. And they don't remember it anyway 90% of the time. And so that's how we handle things. But yes, after a while, you know, the person starts off coming through the doors drunk. After a while, they give it a try, take it one day at a time, being clean and sober, being not drinking, no matter what, one day at a time, just for today. They come to meetings, and pretty quick, they are fond of those meetings, and they like to sit in the same place. They like the regularity. That's the interesting thing about alcohol addiction, is that quart of Jim Beam does the same thing every time. The same thing every time, year after year, up to a point. Of course, our biology changes, and the human body can only take so much torture. But people like that regularity, having the same effect. They drink for the effect, not for the taste, but for the effect. And so they like that sameness, that routine, the repetition. That's really comforting. So when they come to meetings and find the same thing, there's a lot of routine and repetition. These ideas are so important, they're worth repeating. And so they would come in, sit in the same place, say the same things many times, listen to the same stories, and so forth. I would have to encourage my sponsees to go to different meetings and get a different point of view, because there's so much sameness. But they really get attached to that sameness, and they get very upset if you suggest change or if there's a change imposed. I know we had quite a troublesome time at our home group, the Lamplighters, here in Houston. They painted the walls. Oh, my God. And they also changed the way the chairs were set up. And that was somewhat disturbing for many people. Now, what I found tragic was that they had a poster on the wall before they painted that said, no matter who reaches out, we are responsible to be available to them, to reach back. And somehow, and Joseph and I both have been dedicated to that idea that we've got to help the new people. And the group we were attending was known for somehow chasing away new people. I think it was inadvertently, but they were so effective at it that they became known for that quality. And after they painted, that poster did not get put back up, even though I repeatedly complained to the board that somehow they had forgotten that poster. They said, we didn't forget. There was no room on the wall. Well, one wall of the building, that room was totally blank. They had room on the wall. That wasn't it. I think it is a spiritual warfare, and that the enemy won out in that case. But it was so interesting to me that one poster is the one that didn't find its way back up on the wall, and that was the trait, the negative trait that group was known for. Are there any accidents? I don't know. But yes, all you have to do is change the chairs, the arrangement of the chairs, and some people get quite upset. And I've never seen it personally, but it could cause a fist fight. I can easily imagine that. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. Meeting formats are borrowed, so you do it however the local, so it seems to just emanate locally, and you go from different towns, and then they're different, and different cities are different, and different states are different. One thing that was interesting, when I first came to Houston, we have a preamble, how it works in the beginning, and there's three propositions, and the last proposition is, see, God could and would if he was sought. And that was never repeated before. And then all of a sudden, out of the blue, people started repeating that. And then when I went back to Austin, it was repeated back there also.
Oh, I know what you mean. People in unison join in. The whole group joins in as the one person reads that last line. People join in.
Yeah, it wasn't always that way, if you've been around. That came up, I would think, probably about 4 or 5 years ago. It's just sort of popped out. You know, like the wind. Nobody knows where it came from or where it goes. Spiritual by nature, but it spread through all of AA that I've been to. Everybody says it, and it was never formatted in the grapevine or any communication like that, because each group is fairly autonomous, and that's the point. A change in AA is accomplished at a group level by the function known as group conscience. A parliamentary procedure is adopted, and anyone can bring up topics for a discussion. Anything that can impact the group is addressed with lively aplomb, in my experience, which is discussed, providing a platform to gripe, where egos are challenged and everyone is right and no one is wrong. We vote on an agreement to table the proposition to avoid a loggerhead or hurt feelings, and then in the extreme, a possible altercation. Believe it or not, somehow, some way, things get slowly done. Even in group conscience, it's a hard way to go, but we're slowing change in AA. We don't like change. I think that was a good point you made. Once ingrained, meeting agendas are almost impossible to change. The collective thinking may be that it worked for me. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Who put you in charge? Rules? We got no stinking rules. What we got are stinking suggestions. In AA, we have more than our fair share of know-it-alls and egomaniacs with low self-esteem. How I know that, what these things are all about, because in part, I'm talking about me. It's a level playing field where the spirit is affirmed, experience can be taught, lest I forget, let's have some fun and get caught up. Open up and let her fly, versus closed and locked, where anonymity is jealously stocked. Open meetings are just that, come one, come all. Young mothers with babes, toddlers even so, most recurrently know down their tone. Even the occasional sociology student or intern from some specialty will find their way through the doors of recovery. Family members who would show support are welcome to stay and do their part. Doctors, lawyers, and captains of industry, airline pilots, judges with a sense of jurisprudence in order to avoid any tempest fury. In other words, it's a closed meeting now. Some of these folks are in professional. How'd you do? You got closed?
There we go. Thank you.
Yeah, what happened?
Somehow my phone shut off, so I'm back now.
Oh, okay, good. Okay. No, that's all right. I had so much to say. Let's see. Where were we? Okay. Closed meetings sometimes. Now the closed meeting, you don't find them as much anymore. One such club has a checkered history. Now, these are club meetings. Only people, and actually it's not that closed, but friends are not allowed, family's not allowed, children are not allowed. It either has to be you believe that you have a problem with alcohol, or you think you might have a problem with alcohol, which is pretty wide. That's a pretty wide gambit, but it has to follow those criteria. The requirement is desire to stop drinking, or if you think you have a problem with alcohol, you're welcome, otherwise not. One such club has a checkered history. A founder was fond of a lady with a similar disease who frequented the same club location. Alas, his wife was an Al-Anon, and to ensure his dalliance would avoid detention, he and his co-founding cronies closed down the club against any and all inspection. The players are all gone to their reward, but the club policy has remained intact. One of the three clubs in the U.S. that remains completely and uniquely closed. Time to time, perhaps one day when the old-timers, the guardians of the status quo, go the way of all flesh, things might change, or it will boast how it uniquely remained the same. The only thing is true, that there's room for two. Sometimes we need to close meeting because of doctors and lawyers and people and professional, and they're not comfortable with anybody who could just walk in the meeting and discover that they had a problem with alcohol. The person in the room, we don't think any big deal about it, but people who have never had an addiction problem don't really get it. They don't understand. To most people, an alcoholic is someone who's weak-willed. They don't have the ability just to say no. He was such a nice man. I don't know why he can't control himself. They don't understand it's a disease. We stayed too long at the party, and now we became addicted. And we had real choice in this. But, you know, if your doctor is an alcoholic and he's a surgeon, you're really going to think twice when he's going to open you up. So sometimes it's better off that you don't know. The chairperson will bring the room to order, and the first order of business is to announce his or her name, affiliation, addict, Al-Anon, Paranoids Anonymous, whatever it is. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the 12 o'clock meeting of the XYZ Club, Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. Clubs are entities, groups. Are just that. They're just a group of drunks. When two or three people are gathered with no other affiliation, they can call themselves an AA group, which is interesting. It goes from the scriptures where it says, when two or three are gathered in my name, I shall be in the midst of them. So that's got a familiar ring to it. My name is Joseph G., and I'm a grateful recovered alcoholic. My sobriety date is January 10th, 1997. This is a no texting zone, and please stay off the pager and stay off the phone. Put it on stun if you got to run. Thank you. Let us take a moment of silence to use in your own way, followed by the serenity prayer. The silence hangs as the spirit is enlivened and thoughts are collected. Sometimes a barely audible and collective exhale as serenity is summoned. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. The chair, anyone attending, this the chair would say, anyone attending their first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, anywhere, anytime, would you please identify yourself by your first name only so we can get to know you? Getting to know you. Suggestion, a pre-agreed group of like-gen individuals will accompany you to another room so we can introduce you to AA. The inquiry would determine if the newcomer has been given the gift of desperation, a nudge from the judge, keeping a threatening spouse or employer at bay, or somehow has just gotten lost somewhere along the way. A temporary sponsor could be made available, giving the newcomer direction, hope, and a sense of redemption. If they're just window shopping, the mini-meeting would assure them that if they are willing to follow our path, they could expect a better-than-average chance for a daily reprieve from this disease of mind, body, and spirit. Because of the organization required, it might very well be like herding cats. Newcomers' meeting might be the most appropriate venue. What do you think of that, Harold?
That's a terrific outline of what happens, and there's so much there. It's really nicely written, and I like how inclusive this part is. What we want to do is for anyone that's never been to a meeting, give you a sense of what the meeting is like, and this does it nicely. I think you left out one sentence way up at the beginning of this paragraph, this section, called the chair. And the first sentence is, no one is in charge, but what we do have are trusted servants.
Of course,
that is one of the traditions that we don't govern in AA. Everything's done by group conscience, and we don't have presidents or vice presidents or leaders or group leaders, but we have trusted servants. And the person sitting at the front was not elected. It's not a popularity contest. They are a servant. They're there to serve. They're supposed to be there to serve. Now, something I've noticed in the past is that it how quickly it becomes an ego trip, and people begin saying things like, this is my meeting. No, sir, that is not your meeting. That is not your meeting. That is not your meeting. This is our meeting. You are a trusted servant. This is not your meeting. And but you want to see a fist fight, just try saying that to somebody who is on an ego trip and thinks that it is their meeting. You've got a struggle on your hands. And the reason that I bring this up at all is because for the new person, it's very important that they get the sense that we want them to serve and be one of the trusted servants, and we need the person leading the meeting to live out and demonstrate in action that they're a trusted servant. They're not on an ego trip, and so, but it's not very effective to fight it out in front of new people. So it really puts the group in a precarious situation when somebody does go on an ego trip and think that it's their meeting and needs to be corrected. And what we're supposed to do is get with our sponsor, wait till after the meeting, and do it a group of three people, talk it over, and see if we can clarify what the traditions mean and what it means to be, to not govern, but to be a servant instead. It doesn't always go that way, but that's how it was meant to go. Joseph?
Yeah. It doesn't always go that way. I'm an example of that. Are there any visitors are passing through that would like to be recognized? If you have, you know, people would say, yeah, I'm from Oshkosh, and I'm from Ohio, and it's always nice, and I like to do that when I chair a meeting, because I really want to make sure I hear from them, because they always have something new to say and something different and exciting. It always surprises me. I was in New York City on my birthday, on my AA birthday, visiting, and I raised my hand and introduced myself on my birthday, and I wasn't called to speak. And I go, like, I don't understand what happened, but that's the way it goes sometimes. That's part of the familiarity. If you have legal documents to be signed, please raise your hand. With the person sitting next to you, take a moment and please sign off on the document. You are now free to go, or you're now free to stay. Not for people who need it. And I'm really big on this. A lot of people don't agree with that. Some people are forced by the courts to go through. They don't. The assumption is when they have to have their paper signed is that they've sat through the meeting. Well, that's an assumption. AA has no legal obligation to the courts to even sign the papers. We do that as a courtesy to the courts. But some chair people insist on the illusion of control. You're not leaving. You're not leaving early. And if you leave early, I'm not signing your paper. If you came in too late, I'm not signing your paper. And I might not just sign your paper anyway because I'm a dickhead. So,
so now, would you read that? Let me read that last two sentences again, because your phone cut out right as you read, AA is not for people who want it. So let me back up. You are now free to go, or you're now free to stay. AA is not for people who want it. AA is for people who want it, not for people who need it. There we go.
Thank you. Yeah, and that I believe that's the case. Now, some people will argue with me, and I was in a meeting. It was a speaker meeting, and this one fellow made it real clear that he was forced to go into AA, and he tried everything in his power to con his parole officer for him not to have that paper signed and not to go. And then the parole officer got really tough with him and told him if he didn't have the whole page signed on his next visit, he was going back to the slammer. So having no other choice, he sat through the meetings and eventually became Mr. AA. So when you tell him a situation like this, he's very dead dog against it, to put it mildly. My point of view is that even when not part of the punishment process, one, my experience is when you give someone a choice whether to come or stay, and remember they're already sitting down, so it's a body at rest, and you give them the choice to stay or the ability to go, most will stay, and now they'll listen. Some will go. Most will stay. And I think that's the difference. But folks just don't get that. And if you got sober because you were forced to get sober and it worked for you, that's your understanding, and that's what's chiseled in stone in your mind. The preamble, Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contribution. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Let me give you that again. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The chair would say, we ask that everyone respect the privacy and anonymity of each person here. The opinions expressed in this meeting are those of each speaker and are not necessarily those of AA as a whole. We ask those who share their experience, strength, and hope to focus on our intended purpose, recovery from alcoholism. If you're to AA or the XYZ group, please stay after the meeting as we would like to get to know you. I've asked a friend to read How It Works from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, page 58 through 60. Some have heard 1,000 times, and for some, it's the very first time. Thank you. After a couple of years in AA, I told my sponsor, I said, you know, I've heard How It Works hundreds of times. And he says, you don't get it, Joseph. It's still not all about you. This is for the guy who just walked through the door. Oh, it's all about me. I've asked a person to read. We have 12 traditions, to read a tradition. Some read the promises. In St. Paul, Minnesota, they also read, and this is from the chair. You like this, Harold. Will those who have worked the 12 steps and are available to be sponsors, please raise your hand. Please take a moment and look around at these people who are willing to give up their experience, strength, and hope so that you can attain and then maintain sobriety in AA. Thank you. So they explain what sponsorship is. What is sponsorship? Alcoholics Anonymous began with sponsorship. Bill W., only a few months sober, was stricken with a powerful urge to drink. This thought came to him. You need another alcoholic to talk to. You need another alcoholic just as much as he needs you. When we first begin to attend AA meetings, we may feel confused and sick and apprehensive. Although people at meetings respond to our questions willingly, that alone isn't enough. Many other questions occur to us between meetings. We may find we need constant, close support as we begin learning how to live sober. We select an AA member with whom we can feel comfortable, someone with whom we can talk freely and confidently, and we ask that person to be our sponsor. Whether you're a newcomer who's hesitant about bothering anyone or a member who has been around for some time trying to go it alone. Sponsorship is yours for the asking. We urge you to not to delay. Alcoholics recovering in AA want to share what they learned with other alcoholics. We know from experience that our own sobriety is greatly strengthened when we give it away. Now, the only disagreement I have with that, I think that's a great in the preamble, you know, to let people, some people say sponsor, newcomer has no idea what that means. So the jargon the jargon is abstract, you know, get a sponsor, and, you know, and the guy's going like, well, what's a sponsor? Was, you know, none of that is ever mentioned to anybody. It's like you have to learn it through the process of osmosis. You sit in enough meetings and you start getting the jargon and the lay of the land. That's why I really like in the big book where it says, find a prospect and start working on them. You go get them. And you don't have, they're too shy. They don't know. Don't know what they don't. So it's a golden opportunity when they're walking through the door. I wrote this, How to Find a Sponsee. We can go to Skid Row that we already know. And like Bob and Bill is the hospital. Now I hear tell they come in under their own steam, washed but not clean, and desperate for simple instruction. The next time this golden opportunity walks through the door, I will push and shove and help them find their seat so my own recovery becomes complete. If the old-timers were still around, they would have been fighting each other to get to that newcomer instead of having to go to the hospital, going to Skid Row. They're already coming in clean. What a gift that is. And now we're raising our hand, expecting these people somehow to get up the nerve to be in enough pain to come and check us out. Of course, if we didn't share in the meeting, how are they supposed to find us? By sense of smell? It makes no sense to me at all. It works that way, and it works well, but that's the way we've been taught. Harold?
Yes, I'm used to meetings where that becomes a very obvious routine. At the end of the meeting, the chair asks for people who are willing to be sponsors to raise their hands, and he tells the new people, look around you. Those people that are raising their hands are willing to talk with you on the phone, talk about their experience, strength, and hope. A very important part of recovery is to talk to people. These are the people you need to get with. And so they explain it a bit, just very simply, have people raise their hands again and again and again and again. Some of my favorite meetings were that way. My favorite meeting of all time was a men-only meeting. Saturday morning, 7 a.m., and 90 to 100 men would attend. It was wonderful. They weren't real strict about some of the rules, and there was a lot of honesty and sharing and a lot of recovery, a lot of recovery in that room. We helped a lot of people. And if you're going to a 7 a.m. men's meeting Saturday morning, that pretty much precludes any Friday night parties. So right there was one problem solved for me. One of my other favorite meetings was a 6 p.m. meeting daily in Cabo San Lucas. And that's quite a wild town, a resort city. The best marlin fishing, scuba diving, and golf in the world, and I've done all three down there. Quite a wonderful place, quite a wild place. There was a time when you couldn't walk on the beach without being offered cocaine, and now they've done a lot to improve that. It's quite safe. It's not like these border towns. It's on the very tip end of the Baja Peninsula, and in a way it's like its own little country. Even mainland Mexico doesn't really acknowledge it as part of Mexico, really, somehow. I'm not sure why. But we had a great meeting and a lot of men who were willing to do 12-step calls, which was fortunate because I was contacted by the U.S. consulate, Mr. Houston, and he called up and said, "Do you have any idea of people we can call when we receive a call and someone's in trouble? Are there people here that wouldn't mind taking some time and helping them out when they call with various problems?" And I said, "I'd consider it handled." And I set up a group of a dozen pastors, three doctors, and a bunch of guys from AA. And we took a lot of crisis calls and emergency calls. It became quite a nice way to give back and serve. And so in that meeting, we had some wonderful traditions, and that was one of them. Would you raise your hand if you're willing to be a sponsor? A sponsor is someone who will help you through the steps. Do not try to sponsor yourself. That was one of the encouragements from the Cabo San Lucas meeting. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. Interesting story. I've been in Cabo, but I was partying at the time, so I don't remember it like you remember it. I think it would kind of be interesting in a way to say, okay, well, the people who need a sponsor, please raise your hand. And keep your hands up. Okay. And then
you've got to feed that with a little explanation of what a sponsor is.
Yes. Well, we just did that. Remember, we explained that. That explanation has already occurred. So now you know what that is, and you'd say, okay, who needs a sponsor? And then, okay, keep your hand up. And now who's willing to sponsor? And you go, okay, you two guys, what's your name? Frank, John? Okay, you two together. Go, Tom?
I like it. Okay. I've never seen it happen that way, but that would work. I've seen it work in other settings. Not a bad idea.
Now, actually, that's the way it used to be done, believe it or not. When you came into the meeting after the surrender back in the beginning when there was only the two groups, and if you're the guy that sponsored you to the hospital, sponsor was just somebody who met you in the hospital, you did the surrender, and he got you to the meeting. Well, if he couldn't make it to that meeting and you worked the steps right away, they would assign you another sponsor to work the steps.
And you worked all the steps that day, right?
Yeah, well, within a couple days, you did the amend steps. It was done within a week, no more than that. Usually within a couple days, you were done. You did all of the six steps at the time, and you were doing your amends, and the amends was ongoing because you couldn't do it all at one time. Dr. Bob did all his amends. He was sober 3 days, had worked the steps, and made his amends process in the town he lived in by going personally to the people in his a town making amends, and then him and Bill W. went to town's hospital. Then in the 3 days, he took the bus or the train into New York and went to town's hospital with Bill and found AA's number three, Bill Duff. So they were pretty quick back then. I don't think people have changed really that drastically. I think when you give a person an opportunity to be lazy, they will take that in a heartbeat. A good meeting is when you hear something you needed to hear. A great meeting is when you said something that someone else needed to hear. The chair suggests a topic or expands on the on a suggested topic with his experience, strength, and hope. 3 to 5 minutes is sufficient to accomplish this feat. The chair also has spoken its piece. It suggests that there should be no crosstalk. We do not talk directly to someone's chair. When we share, we need to feel as to what we say. The chair is to see to an orderly conduct of the meeting. Anyone unruly or disturbing the group will be asked to leave. The chair monitors the time allotted and signals when time is up so the group is not taken hostage. Usually they're pretty liberal with that. That's really a group conscience deal. But you don't want to have the group being taken hostage. Although, if you really look at the traditions, we can't really say what someone says in an AA meeting. You know, the only thing that they're required to not to say in an AA meeting is that there's fire. Other than that, it's kind of like free speech. Although some people don't look at it that way, they want to keep it germane, and because it's about. But I've been in meetings where some, you know, guy that's a little off his rocker would go on a rant, and you know, some people accept that for the time because they know that God's really in charge of this thing, and everything needs to work out. Once we let God be in charge of the thing, it always seems to work out better that way, and it takes a lot less energy. The chair sees to the collection of funds and to the circulation of a newcomer's packet, if you must, the signing of court and medical documents, and that's enough. The chair does not share, let me repeat that, the chair does not share after someone speaks. That would be crosstalk. The chair does not affirm, relate, correct, or suggest anything that has been said. The chair listens attentively. Crosstalk from the chair also deprives precious time from others who may need it to share. When we share in the meeting, we are participating in our own recovery. Sometimes the most important thing we will hear in the meeting will fall gingerly from our own lips. Harold?
Boy, that's a very important paragraph, and I agree completely. I've been to so many meetings where the chair somehow got the idea that he or she is supposed to comment on every share that's made. So after each person speaks, the chair speaks. And that's not how it should be. It's really doesn't help. I've seen meetings where the chair will just facilitate the meeting. They're not expected to be brilliant or comment on everything. A lot of people get to share, and it's a great meeting, and that's how it's designed to work. So for those of you who have chaired meetings and have found a need to comment on every share, cut it out. Joseph?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, that's a pet peeve of mine, primarily because there's only so much time. You know, the meetings are usually an hour, and every time the chair speaks, not only is it, I believe, to be disruptive, he's teaching. It's not about teaching. It's about, there's an hour. So if you're participating in your own recovery when you need to speak, he's taking that time away from someone. He's back on his bar stool again, telling the world how the world turns, how it all works. You know, that's not really good recovery. A number one human fear is speaking in public, even more so than the death of the body, the death of a child, the loss of a home, or even loss of a job. For ridicule is death to the ego, and the ego will sacrifice the body on the altar of pride in a vain attempt to stay alive. The preacher said, vanity is a vanity, all is vanity. People should be encouraged to speak if they have something to say. I believe it goes like this, the wise man speaks because he has something to say. The fool speaks to say something. We would like to invite our sponsor volunteer to start us off sharing their experience, strength, and hope. I like that too. Okay, who's available to sponsor? Why don't you let the sponsors share?
There you go. I like that.
Yeah, he's the guy. He's the one. Okay, if you're going to do it where if he's auditioning, if this is a Miss America sponsor contest, then he's auditioning. Give him the opportunity to audition. There are many forms of these, but these are opinions. The first that comes to mind are rotation. First to the right, first to the left. We go around the room in a rotation, give your name and sobriety date. Otherwise, it's your choice to pass or to participate. I like when you give your name and your sobriety date. I found that to be really productive. Usually works in a really small meeting, but I've seen it in bigger meetings too. People who normally would be too shy to share will share. And then you'll find out, you know, I have 2 days sober, and he was just sitting in the back, and he might have sitting in the back. I know the post oak over here, and there was guys in there would sit in the back for 2 years and never shared in a meeting. This format usually works in smaller meetings. It's a very strong impact to give the shrinking violets the opportunity to share or at least make themselves known to the group. Round robin, the chair picks someone with the instruction upon completing their share, pick someone else, someone you know, someone you don't know. Men pick women pick men, etc. I like that one too. It's kind of like, you know, the least the chair does, the better this thing works. Directed meetings are my least favorite. The chair picks all speakers in an attempt to be moved by the spirit of random selection or by familiarity of cronyism. Oftentimes, people are called who attend regularly and have developed a well-practiced sharing. Pretty young women are often called upon, confirming Oscar Wilde that only young women have things to say. But that's relative to the oldest man in the room. This is my least personal favorite, requiring the greatest amount of work and demonstrating the greatest restraint to the spirit. It also gives the chair the illusion of control. Alas, in California, where a meeting can be 1,000 or more, directed meetings is the order of the day, and rightfully so. There's just too many when you have it. Like, you have to be a little bit more in control. But most meetings are not like that. Directed two or one of the most powerful meetings I ever attended was a directed meeting. The chair took the topic of 12 steps. The chair called on the first speaker and asked them to address their experience, strength, and hope with step one. Upon conclusion of the chair called the next speaker and asked them that they would share their experience, strength, and hope with step two, and so on. Unless they allowed, and in the allotted hour, all 12 steps were addressed. It was one of the best meetings I'd ever been to. Harold?
That's terrific. I actually haven't been in a meeting where that was the format, but I can imagine that would be real valuable. Joseph?
It was really interesting. The volunteer meeting, that's the least amount of work, the most dependent on the spirit, and some of the most rewarding. The chair finishes with the topic and with the introduction, and this is a volunteer meeting. It's been some time since you shared. If your sponsor's directed you to share or you have to get something off your chest, now is the time. This is your meeting. The floor is open. Some chairs are miffed by the silence, and don't give the silence time enough to do the heavy lifting. The phenomenon of the committee, that's the committee in our head, comes into play. If you have 50 people in a room and with their committees giving the constant chatter of the mind, you have a cast of thousands. Once the room knows that you will not relent, silence will become deafening. Alone with their thoughts, someone will always speak up. The meetings will slowly take off with a mind of its own, and it becomes abundantly clear that God has been the one in charge after all. Abbreviated speaker meetings, an individual speaks for of their experience, strength, and hope for about 20 minutes, and the meeting is then open speaking to the individual experience. This is a New York-style kind of meeting. The speaker meeting, an individual speaks of what AA was like, what happened, and what it was like now in a general way for about an hour, his story. A big book study, a step study, the 12 traditions and the 12 steps, a meditation meeting, a sponsorship workshop, a third legacy meeting, that's our organizational meeting, a men's meeting, a woman's meeting, a young people's meeting, etc., etc. About halfway through the meeting, known as halftime, the chair chimes in with, "According to our seventh tradition, we are self-supporting through our own contributions. If this is your first meeting, it's on us. If this is your last meeting, please don't take anything out." Wallets are open and purses clasp snap as we gingerly do our banking. With halftime in place, the shares are less distracting. I like to stop the meeting right there. Okay, this is halftime. Are there any AA announcements? Well, people are doing their banking. You do the announcements. I think it's really rude when they just pass the basket, people are doing their banking, and somebody's trying to share. It's very distracting, and I think it's rude to the person who's got the floor. But that's how they do it. There are any AA announcements. The chair explains to those who just came in, the only AA meeting you're ever late to is your first meeting. As long as you make it to the closing prayer, you're right on time. The topic is, sometimes I'll play with people, I do that, I said, okay, the topic is being punctual. Because these people came in late, they have no idea what the thing is. Only kidding. And who's next? And so you get people prepared, and I think it's a good way to keep it moving. Some tips that have helped me sharing at meetings, Tim M. Always mention something to do with alcoholic drinking. People who don't know you will connect better if they know you're one of them. Mention a current or recent difficulty. People who are new or struggling will also connect better if they realize you're a human who experiences difficulties from time to time rather than a lecturer from a superior or unattainable planet. Mention the big book. People need to know where the path to the solution lies and what it is. They can't argue with it because most don't know what it is. If you want to hide stuff from an alcoholic, you put it in our basic text of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. 4, mention what step-oriented actions have been taken and are being taken about 1 and 2 and the results of you about and the results you've been getting from doing those steps. Speaking from your own experience of identifying with taking actions based on the big book rather than lecturing on its context. Stories always come across better than lectures. Also, no one can argue with your experience, for it's yours and yours alone. It is possible in 3 minutes to get a newcomer to identify with you without intimidating them and to share a solution. Besides, if you share more than 3 minutes, it's all about you. Harold?
That's true. That's wonderful. The idea is that I like to tell the new people, what we do is we come in here and we learn and we do the 12 steps together. And all of that prepares us to reach back and help someone newer in the program and help them out. So you're now being prepared to help someone else later. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. A bit of a disclaimer. There are no rules. They're more like guidelines. We do not have share police. Sometimes love and tolerance presents itself, and what is shared is not program or AA, and sometimes an AA meeting resembles a cross between group therapy, self-help program, and a revival meeting. 5 minutes left. The chair again makes itself known, and questions are there any burning desires? I like that. Here they do, if there's any burning desire, meaning that if you don't speak, you'll go out and drink. I don't think they should even say that. I think that it's a form of intimidation when you say that. A burning desire might be you finally welled up in you that you needed something to say and that you're not going to go drink, but you needed to say something. So you make put a little hoop in there. And I don't like that, but that's the way it's done. You know, if you don't speak, you're going to go drink. Oh, okay. So the person's not going to talk because he wasn't going to go drink, but he needed to talk. The chair explains that we are on a chip system. We celebrate lengths of sobriety. Is there anyone celebrating an AA birthday today that would like to be recognized? Is there anyone celebrating years of sobriety for this current month that would like to be recognized? Please give us your name and your sobriety date. Is there anyone celebrating months of sobriety? Please give us your name, 18 months, 9 months. You got to remember now, picture this. People are coming up now. I know you know this. People are coming up. They're hearing what the chips are. They're hearing why we're celebrating the lengths of sobriety. They're getting a picture. The new man is getting a picture of what's the – people are coming up to the desk to get their little chip and their hug. They might give their name, which I think is horrendous. You give your name and your sobriety date, or you just give your name. You say, hi, I'm an alcoholic, and whatever it is. It's confirming the disease of alcoholism to the group and to yourself psychologically. I think it's a tremendous thing to personally give their name so we get to know their name. And they're beating a little path to the chair. And finally, the momentum continues to build. drum roll please, as the chair pauses and pulls out an aluminum-colored disc and explains, this is the beginner's chip. It's an outward sign of an inward commitment to try our way of life for 24 hours. Are there any takers? Please come up. The well-worn path of those who have just come before you, please give us your name. My name is John or Jane, and for the very first time, they have the opportunity to say that they're an alcoholic to a like-minded group of peers. It sounds like step one to me. The chair is still down with the acclamation. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. What you hear here, who you see here, let it stay here. And the group chimes in, hear, hear. The chair, please clean up the wreckage of your presence. Anything that came in with you, please take it out with you. The chair, we will close in the usual manner. They either pick or they do the trick. Please take us out. The room circles up, hand in hand. The rest is extemporaneous, but as for me, it goes like this. Let this circle represent what we could do together, that which we cannot do alone. Whose Father? In unison, our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread and forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever and ever. Amen. And then we shake hands and we go, keep coming back. It works if you work it. Harold, any last words?
That is an overview of a meeting, and I encourage any of you who think you might drink too much, go to a meeting. You'll be warmly welcomed, and it's a wonderful experience. You don't have to say anything. You can just listen and feel the love of people who will love you until you learn to love yourself. Thanks, Joseph.
Thank you, Harold. And in closing, I'd say Rum Radio, we're in 143 foreign countries, including Mississippi. We're over just a little over 2,500 towns, cities, and villages, and approaching 167,000 hits on the website as of our anniversary date, 9/10/09. So if you want some good information on sponsorship, it's Rum Radio and rumradio.org. Thanks again, Harold, and have a good night.
Good night, everybody.